This is Like Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Milwaukee is facing a lot of systemic problems. Evictions, unemployment, and segregation, to name just a few. Most of these issues are well known, and despite seemingly well-intended efforts, they persist. A new series from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Ideas Lab is hoping to move these conversations forward. Instead of focusing on the pervasiveness of these problems, it's looking at solutions. The series, spearheaded by reporter James Causey, is called Milwaukee's Promise. Causey joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the series.
So for people who might be unfamiliar with Milwaukee's pretty recent history, I think it might surprise them to know that at one time, the area was actually a place where Black Americans had higher than average expectations for wages, home ownership, and some quality of life markers. How did we get from that pretty high to the low that we're at now?
Well, I think this Black utopia that we speak of in the 1970s and a little bit before that came about because this was a city that needed Black workers. They needed Black workers to fill the factory jobs, to do the welding jobs, to do the tannery work, the brewery work. And sometimes a lot of the work that other people didn't want to do. They needed the workers from the South to come here and do that work, because otherwise it wouldn't have got done. They just didn't have enough workers. So during that time, you know, employment was, say you were working at A.O. Smith and you didn't like how someone was treating you. You could literally leave that job at A.O. Smith and get a job at Slits or one of the tanneries the next day or within a couple of days, because jobs were that plentiful. And because of that, that was a time where many Blacks were able to purchase their first home, many of them with just a high school degree. And they were able to buy homes, they were able to buy cars, put a little money to the side. And a lot of people got married during that time as well. So the Black marriage rate was pretty high at that time, too.
Now, when we compare Milwaukee to other cities around the country, I think some people are going to know kind of how we fare, but others might not. How does Milwaukee stack up to other large metropolitan areas?
Well, Milwaukee is a city in a heavy transition. I mean, we lost our manufacturing base, and that hurt us a lot when a lot of those jobs left or moved to overseas or moved to the South. That took a lot of valuable work with them. So we lost that work, and when we started to lose that work, a lot of people started to lose their homes as well. You know, money put aside at first that you could send your kids to college, there was no money left for that. When you compare Milwaukee to other metropolitan cities like Cleveland, Chicago, Detroit, they all kind of suffered the same fate because they lost their manufacturing base. However, some cities were better at finding other plans for employment for people with little to no college education. And Milwaukee has always struggled to really find that type of work for people. So when you say, how is Milwaukee faring? Not too well. It's been ranked over and over again as one of the most segregated cities in the country. And it's also been labeled as one of the worst places to raise a Black child. And that leaves a stain on people. And we need to address that right now.
Yeah. You know, your series, of course, is really looking at solutions. And something you actually highlighted, which I guess is more historical, but has a lot of impacts on what this city looks like today. You highlighted a somewhat comparable city, Cleveland, Ohio. What were the circumstances that city was facing, and how did they handle it differently than Milwaukee?
Well, Cleveland is still a city in transition, much like Milwaukee. But one thing that Cleveland did is they looked to their homegrown institutions, the businesses that could not move, the businesses that had Cleveland in their name, and said, how are you guys going to be part of the solution? You see the problems that exist here. What do you plan on doing about it? So the Cleveland clinics, the hospitals, the universities, and places that could not leave all came to the table, and they wanted to figure out what they could do to increase the number of jobs in Cleveland and try to change the conditions. This took real leadership because people sort of had to let their guard down. You're talking about your secrets and things like that. And a lot of people don't want to talk about, you know, their finances and things like that with people who they may view as their competitors. But what they decided to do was say, okay, what are the things that we can invest in that we all use? And one of the things that they came up with is like, we all send out our laundry, but we send our laundry services outside of Cleveland, outside the state to get our linen and things like that done. So what if we created a laundry facility in Cleveland and we hired workers from the community and trained them on how to do the cleaning? And we only sent like a portion of our business to this laundry facility and just see how it goes. Well, they did that and it had to be more successful than they ever thought it would be. Then they said, okay, what else could we do? And they came up with two other businesses. One is the largest greenhouse in the Midwest, where they grow lettuce and all kinds of veggies like that. And they hire people from the neighborhoods to run that business. And that lettuce that used to come from California during the wintertime now comes from Cleveland. And so they supply the restaurants, the grocery stores, and the schools with fresh lettuce that's grown right there in Cleveland in this 75 degree greenhouse. And it's fantastic. They also invested in a solar panel business that's a little bit more techy, but they hire people to do that too. So by hiring these people, they have over 250 employees right now. They work at these three facilities, and what they do, they solve a number of problems. They pay each worker more than minimum wage. Most of them make between $15 and $18 an hour. They can have their money put to the side, a portion of their checks put to the side to invest in housing. So a lot of workers are becoming homeowners that way too. So it's solving that issue. It also solved the issue of transportation because these businesses are located in areas where transportation wouldn't be an issue because a lot of people could take the bus or find other simple means to get to work. A couple of workers I talked to even ride their bikes to work. So it solves that issue too. And you're teaching them skills. And so you're building homeowners who take pride in their communities, which also addresses the crime in the area and things like that. It reduces blight and all these other things. And at the same time, you're giving people hope. And that's the main thing that I see coming from this. So the Cleveland Cooperative is one of those programs that I say is a no-brainer. And it's something that we really should consider here, because when you look at the former A.O. Smith site, Century City, on the city's northwest side, I think that facility would be prime for either one of those types of businesses to start here.
Well, and something that you say in the article, of course, is Milwaukee is a place where these kinds of good ideas go to die in some ways. You know, we have all of these grand plans, but it feels like they don't really go anywhere. And it seems like the city of Milwaukee heard about, you know, what they were doing in Cleveland, thought this was a great idea, and then it didn't go anywhere. What are some of the obstacles to really getting these ideas from the idea phase to actually being implemented?
Well, they heard about the idea because I wrote about it like 3 years ago. So that's why they heard about the idea, and everybody thought it was a fantastic to start with, but we always get caught up into this thing like, where's the money going to come from? Or we have these meetings and then they realize that it requires work and no one really wants to take the leadership role and it just doesn't go anywhere. And we have to move beyond that. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of these marches and protests today, because people are sick and tired of a lot of these great ideas not going anywhere. So, you know, when I wrote this piece, I started getting all these emails from people who said, yeah, I wanted to start this business, or this was a plan that we had in Milwaukee years ago that was doing very well, but it failed because of lack of funding. This was a program that we had going on in Milwaukee, but we didn't get this grant. And so when the grant ended, the program ended. And we just got to do a better job on having sustainability, being able to overcome if a grant doesn't come through. If it was a program that was working, then it shouldn't just be reliant on a grant from the federal government. And if that grant doesn't come through, or if it's a two-year grant, after 2 years, the program ends and you leave people stuck. We just have to find a better way to do that. And that's why I think we're hearing a lot of ideas like defund the police, because when you look at the police budget and you see that it's almost $300 million, and you think that the Cleveland Cooperative Program would only cost like a little bit of over $150,000 just to get people here to start putting things in motion from Cleveland, makes you wonder like, well, maybe defunding may not be such a bad idea if it could go into different ideas like this to help different portions of the city. So I just think that we have to have go into these plans with open minds and think about people first. And because a lot of these things that we're doing now, when you think about it, you can't police yourself out of a lot of the problems that we have today. You almost have to come up with outside the box thinking or to come up with real solutions.
Yeah. Now, you name a number of different programs, kind of, you know, a one sentence kind of description of, you know, what they do in other cities. I'm curious to know what the rest of the series is going to lay out.
I don't want to give too much away, but like, for instance, you know, we have an eviction problem here in the city. Well, New York City had the same problem, and what they decided to do, a bunch of the nonprofits got together and they wanted to ensure that anyone who was going to eviction court would have representation. And as a result, a lot of people are staying in their homes longer because they're working out deals with their landlord. Their stuff is not being thrown out. Kids are not being forced to go to different schools, and they're not put under the stress of trying to figure out and navigate what's going on with their parents and why their stuff is out on the street. It's called the Right to Counsel Bill that passed. And it sounds like one of the type of things that we should be doing here. And it's working. They've had it since 2018 in New York. And what they're finding out is people are staying in their homes longer. Landlords may not like it all the way, but I didn't find too many landlords who complained about it a great deal. The judges like it because it creates fairness in the courtroom. So those are the types of ideas that I think we really need to be doing here. The thing is with a right to counsel is that we have to convince the state to want to be on board with something like this. If you want, I could tell you about another idea too that's not so grand, but it just really came about because one young man was just so fed up with what he saw in the school system that he wanted to do something about it. And this was called Fatherhood Fridays. Michael Pratt, who's the son of former mayor Marvin Pratt, lives in Nashville, Tennessee now. And what he was noticing is that Black boys just did not really want to read a lot. He's in education, and he would talk to the boys about, you know, why do you struggle with reading? What's the deal with reading? How many people do you see read? How many men do you see read? And he noticed that a lot of boys did not see a lot of men read. And because of that, they just didn't see the importance of reading. So what he did is he organized his fraternity brothers from Phi Beta Sigma and other Black fraternities and he challenged them to go into schools and read to kids in impoverished schools. And since then, this has been growing by dozens every single time they have it. So once a month, they go into the schools and they mentor the kids, they read to them, they do breakfast with them, and the kids love it. And they don't just read to the boys, they read to the girls as well. And this also addresses the issue that I think we need to get a handle on, and that's the lack of Black male teachers in our educational system. When you see all these Black professional men coming into a school and reading to these kids who are mostly Black or Latino, and most of these kids don't have Black or Latino teachers, most of the teachers are white women, you can see how they take to these men. It's like magical. And I didn't believe it until I actually saw it myself. I mean, one young boy, I actually started doing push-ups for one of the men who came in because he was just trying to impress him so much. And the guy said, okay, I see you can do the push-ups. Now let's read this book. And the principal said that she'd noticed how attendance has increased at the school during this time and how behavior also increases because the men take on they're not just reading to them, they're taking on a mentorship role where they're instructing the kids and they're providing that father figure to a lot of these kids that don't have it at home. So that's just something simple that if we can't do that here, then there's hardly anything we can't do.
Yeah. Well, James, I'm really looking forward to the rest of the series. And thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and speaking with me today.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. But can I say one more thing before I go?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so one component that's coming up that makes this series really special is the engagement component that we're doing with this series. And one thing that I'm doing as well is I want to know what people's vision of the city is. You know, you can't go anywhere without vision. So I'm challenging people to create vision boards on what you expect the city to look like a year from now. What do you want the city to look like? And don't focus so much on the problem, but what would the solution look like? And so a vision board could be, you're going to take a piece of paper, 20 by 22 or something like that, cut out pictures, cut out words, write words, whatever you want to do, but create what your vision of the city should look like a year from now. And when you get that done, send it to me. You know, take a picture of it, tell me what's on your vision board and send it to me. And I want to have conversations around what our vision should look like a year from now. And I want leaders of our city to look at these vision boards too, to see if their vision matches up with the visions of the people they represent. So I think that's a huge component, and we're going to be doing an engagement event around that in July, late July. So look forward to that as well.
James Causey is a reporter for the Ideas Lab at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His latest series, called Milwaukee's Promise, will explore solutions to some of the city's problems. Causey spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers.